The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We have a really good show for you today. This is a cutting edge topic, right on the edge over here. Today, in this half hour of the show, we're going to have Jewish Federation Scott Kaufman. He's going to talk us what's happening with the JCC in Oak Park. Big news this week. It's not closing. Stay tuned. Find out the details. Yes, right here on the Jewish Hour. We have wonderful Jewish music throughout the show. Stay tuned through to the end and listen to all the wonderful Jewish music. The portion of the week is the portion of Ki Savo. We're getting towards the end of the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 26 and further. An awesome Hasidic story that will just leave you thinking. We're going to do the news, but before we do the news, let's hear the ram's horn, the shofar blowing in honor of the upcoming Rosh Hashanah holiday. And now the news. Hamas continued firing rockets into southern Israel this week. In return, Israel blew up a Hamas munitions factory in Gaza. Why is there a Hamas munitions factory in Gaza? And fired a missile carrying Hamas's defense minister, killing him and one other passenger. One policeman remains in stable condition after being stabbed in the leg by an Arab terrorist. The attack took place near the Damascus Gate in Jerusalem. The terrorist was arrested and charged with attempted murder. Terrorists blew up an IDF jeep in East Jerusalem. One soldier suffered smoke inhalation. In a series of raids near Shechem, IDF forces found four deer in the house of a wanted terrorist. I guess it's like, you know, venison. What's, you know, soldiers, I guess you're not allowed to keep deer in your house in Israel. Soldiers also found weapons and ammo in the house. The big story, of course, is that the news is they found the deer. Weapons and ammo, that's like, hey, you know. Two of the deer were released to the wild immediately. The other two had been abused and were sent to a reserve for rehab and to be released back into the wild. Ruth Mammon of northern Israel miraculously escaped serious injury after being shot in the head while on vacation near the Jordan border. Mammon thought she had been hit in the head by a rock. X-rays showed a bullet from a Kalashnikov rifle lodged in her brain. The bullet had been fired from Jordan. Let's go, God, yes. And finally, I don't even know what category to put this story in. Osem, Israel's largest food maker, won a lawsuit against Heinz, saying that Heinz ketchup cannot be called ketchup. Israel standards demand that ketchup contain at least 42% tomato. Heinz ketchup contains 21% tomato. From now on, the product will be called Heinz Tomato Seasoning in Ivrit. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music, and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. Or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. We are enjoying the day, so we thought we'd start off with a little music. This is brand new from Benny Friedman. It's Todah Lecha Hashem. Thanks, God. Someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Jewish Shulfinman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. We got a request. We get requests all the time, and if we can, we will play what you request. This one is from an anonymous person who wished not to be named but lives in West Bloomfield, Michigan, listens to this radio program on 1500 AM every Sunday morning. So she tells me she wanted to hear, just because it reminded her of her mom, my Yiddish mama. So this is Yossele Rosenblatt. Thanks for coming in.
Ich will bei euch eine Kasche fragen, sucht mir, wer es kennt. Mit welcher Teiere vermeig ist, Mensch Gott alle mehr. Me kauft uns nicht für keine Geld, das gibt mir nur im Sinn. In doch hat man verliebt zu uns euch, wie Tränen man vergibt. Als Weite gibt man keinem nicht, es hilft sich kein Gewinn. Ahoi, wäre das verleire.
Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's a symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mycosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mycosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale. Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. 2 weeks from tonight is Rosh Hashanah, and one of the things everybody's thinking about is getting written in the good book, and we'll talk about that later. But this is the Maccabees doing the good book.
Yesterday, think it's hours more. I wish that someone would please tell me what it is we're praying for.
Others will increase. Hopefully, we'll open our eyes and think more consciously.
Hopefully,
we'll go from where we are to where we want to be.
Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park is something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Herschel Tinman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Scott Kaufman from Jewish Federation is going to talk to us. We're talking about the JCC in Oak Park. How are you today, Scott?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thank God. So let's back up to the very beginning as to what started this all in April.
It really started before that because, you know, the first step in this process was sort of the discovery, and it was, I think, January, the year before January, so a year and a half ago, when it was discovered the financial irregularities at the JCC. Now, there was no theft, but there was effectively covering up of losses. So the extent of the financial condition was learned over the following 3 or 4 months as we recreated the books and brought in outside sort of, for lack of a better word, forensic accountants to rebuild the actual position. What was happening is they were paying, taking future unearned revenue, paying current bills, and amassing more and more debt, particularly on the backs of vendors in the multiple millions. So,
is this for the JCC, including West Bloomfield Land?
Yeah, the JCC inclusive, both JCCs. It wasn't separated. It was vendors in both places were 6 months or a year behind being paid. And when we got to the bottom of that, there was a decision made. There was some discussion. Should it go bankrupt? We felt as a federation, and it was that you can't leave these people who did the work, many of whom were small mom-and-pop contractors from the Jewish community and from the general community. You can't leave them holding the bag. And even though the JCC didn't have the money, Federation and the Foundation put in multiple millions at that point, raised some and spent some, to effectively pay everyone current. We felt it was the right thing to do, it was the ethical thing to do, and you know, we're a value-driven organization. Now, there was some question of whether that was the right move. Are we setting a bad precedent for other agencies to be bailed out? You know, legitimate discussion, but at the end of the day, I think, you know, people certainly lost their jobs over this, and came down to ethics and what's the right thing to do. People did the work, they need to be paid. Otherwise, the story in the paper, too, would be the Jews didn't live up to their, you know, they're not going to distinguish which organization or this or that. So that's kind of what started. So then is the new accounting team drilled deeper, they were able to separate the profitability of each facility. You had significant losses at the Oak Park facility, less so in West Bloomfield. Now, the West Bloomfield has a different set of problems, in some ways more significant, that are going to have to be dealt with over time. The size of the facility, the deferred maintenance numbers are enormous. And demographically, there's 10 years from now, is that going to be a viable location or not? So that's kind of phase two, what to do with that facility. So phase one was, because it couldn't afford to run both facilities, and you had one that was losing, depending on how you counted, somewhere between 800 and 1,000 and maybe 1,000,001, depending on how you allocate overhead to both places. But suffice it to say, it was losing a lot of money. It was a 58-year-old building that was losing money. And the center effectively could not afford to stay in business if they were going to run two facilities. So the decision was made. They effectively gave the keys back to the landlord, which was the Federation was the landlord. We own the building. So now we have this building. We're not in the business of running community centers. They can't run it. It would put them out of business because we couldn't continue to pour more money than our annual allocation because our general fund had been depleting. It took a big hit with this JCC thing and paying off all these vendors, and it would have been fiscally irresponsible to take the community's emergency money and pour it all into this and do that. So I think while it was a painful decision, a heart-wrenching decision, it was the right decision at the time. So then what happened is, okay, what do we do now? We have a neighborhood in Oak Park, Southfield Heights, was a vibrant Jewish community. This is not a story of, oh, the dead neighborhood, and we're going to move somewhere else. This is a growing neighborhood, in fact. So what do we do? So we said, okay, we have to create an RFP, a request for proposal, and it has to, a few goals, a few overriding kind of, these three things had to happen for this, you know, for whatever we decided to do with it. It had to remain a part of the Jewish community, meaning you have all these other Jewish organizations and synagogues and facilities and apartments all right there, schools. You couldn't plop in something that made no sense in the context of the Jewish community. Two, it had to serve the community, meaning what needs are there, which are different than what wants are there, but, you know, things that, what services are needed to maintain a certain quality of life in the community, and how can we deliver them, or through a third party, how can they be delivered in that space? And three, it had to be something that was financially sound, stable, and doable, affordable, for lack of a better word. It needed to have, you couldn't, no matter how good someone's idea was, if they didn't have the capital to execute it or stay in business, I didn't want to be back in the same place 6 months or a year from the day, okay, here's the lease, the person's going to run it just like a JCC, and they don't really have any money, and they bleed money. Even if they cut the losses in half, they run out of money, and we're right back where we are. So,
okay. Let me jump in over here, Scott. Yeah, so if you're just tuning in, we're talking to Scott Kaufman. We're talking about the JCC in Oak Park. So before it was announced that the JCC was scheduled to be closed in Oak Park, I would assume that the people in charge would know that there was going to be a whole hue and outcry from the community and, you know, to the point of almost revolution. What was at that point were the powers of be planning to deal with the masses?
Right. So, yes, it was clear that that was going to happen, and it did. And we had those two large town hall meetings. I think in the aggregate, probably about 800 people showed up. It was a big deal. It was a difficult thing for many people and totally understandable. So, you know, we were looking out for the long-term financial stability of the community, and this was a very tough decision. It was certainly not one anyone enjoyed making. So now it became incumbent on us to do the best job we could to find some sort of solution. So we sent this RFP out and got lots of proposals, none of which were kind of all-encompassing. They were some of them were parts of the thing, like somebody wanted to run a swim school and someone wanted to run spinning or you know, workout room or a banquet space. You know, things. We got proposals like that. Some other Jewish organizations in town just wanted meeting space and were willing to pay some rent. We had a couple groups look at it from a overall more of a community center, not too different than what was already there, but they really didn't have the financial ability as we dug deeper into it, because we wanted to make sure whoever we brought in, as I said, could sustain this thing. So we were going back and forth, and probably of all the deals, the one that made the most sense at that time was us as a landlord having to piece together lots of people, some with free rent, some with paying something, some, you know, to kind of keep as many of the things as we could, which wasn't particularly a good solution because we were going to lose a lot of money. It's a business we don't really know anything about, and it's not our expertise. So it was, you know, the debate then, well, do you just close it? Well, just closing it until you find something is expensive too, because you can't, you'd have to heat it, you'd have to keep it secure, there are maintenance costs, you can't, you know, and frankly, the idea of it sitting empty was kind of horrible and painful and emotionally not a good thing. So we're working, I don't know, we probably had 80 meetings on this with volunteers and donors and trying to get foundations to put up money and you know, and this was it was really hard. It was hard because it was a hard business case to solve, both operationally and financially. It was hard because people were angry and felt bad, and these are my neighbors and friends and you know, and people I know, and it was, and not just me, our leadership, and you know, it was hard on a lot of levels. It may have been, you know, in some ways one of the more challenging professional episodes, certainly my career. Lost a lot of sleep about this, and luckily, you know, we were talking to some major donors and this and that, and people were sort of kicking the tires, but nobody would commit to anything. Until, for a baseball analogy, we got to the bottom of the ninth with two outs, maybe even two strikes.
Yeah, you're taking away my next question. Why did it wait? I mean, the thing was supposed to close next Monday, and we hear it already last Tuesday. It's sort of like you say, yeah, it's like way at the end.
Right. I think, you know, I can't put myself in the mind of the funders, but possibly people were waiting for someone else to save the day. Someone else, you know, because, look, it's a big commitment that somebody's making. Huge. And maybe it was just in their mind that they thought about the implications of this and the community. You know, we're blessed. We have great philanthropists in this community who care a lot. And, you know, would my life have been a lot easier if they got to this decision 6 months ago? Would our president's been easier? Of course it would have. But this is a great thing. And you know, so that really, it's a week ago this morning, basically, came together. More or less, our presidents, with the help of the mayor of Oak Park, Mary Ann McClellan, she was very helpful sort of brokering this and encouraging the donor and working sort of behind the scenes. We're able to make a deal, a handshake deal that made sense. And you know, what the deal was or is you know, we have a funder or funders who are willing to not only put the capital in to update this to a 21st century facility, so a better facility, but sustain its operations for a number of years. Not, it doesn't mean forever. I can't promise what the future brings, but, you know, it's a huge positive thing. And, you know, we had agreed, Larry Wolf, the president of the Federation, and I, to go meet with sort of the grassroots group on Monday. We'd agreed weeks ago, because even if we were the bearers of bad news, we tried our best, we couldn't do anything, we felt that, you know, that people were entitled to hear that, and we weren't, you know, it wouldn't have been a very fun evening, I'm sure, for us. We would have probably taken a lot of heat, and you know, we would have done that because it was the right thing to do. But, you know, 72 hours before the meeting, the facts on the ground changed, and now it became a very positive day and something the community, I believe, will be very happy about. Now, the devil's
okay, so let's see. So now, so the good news is that the JCC is not going to close.
Well, no, it will close, but it will reopen.
Okay, so on it was scheduled to close on August 31st. So it's going to close on August 31st.
Yes, and that was extended by 90 days because of the, you know, we left those meetings in January with sort of the community and saying we have to give this community a chance because they wanted to see if they could raise money and solve this, even if it meant losing probably another $250,000 because the summer months are slow, you got air conditioning costs. You know, so we extended that. Frankly, I'm not sure how we're paying for that, but we did, and to give the community a chance. And at that time, the community did surveys and you know, helped infuse what are the highest priorities of uses, you know, because no one's going to build exactly what was there because then they'll lose
money,
too.
Just be back
too.
In the same place again. Okay,
right,
so Scott Kaufman from the Jewish Federation. So what's going to happen September 1st?
Okay, so what's happening as we speak is the donor, along with a couple of industry professionals at the Federation, volunteers, foundation volunteers, who are expertise in engineering and building and architecture, along with the architecture firm and the donor and their representatives, are gathering to look at a plan and look at all the various uses. And you know, in a perfect world, that would have been done first, but this is where we're at. And they, over the next few months, will develop a plan that then they will submit for approval to the government, the city, in Oak Park, which I would imagine should be relatively easy because it's obviously an important thing for the city to have. They will tear down significant portions of the building. I don't exactly know how much, but one discussion is around keeping the pool because it's newer and tearing down the older parts to put a more energy-efficient, user-friendly, more natural light, not so much feel like an old school building.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the building is. It was built in the mid-50s, so it is an old building. It's not in terrible shape, but it's not how you would design it today, ceiling height-wise in your workout facility and all that. So the plan will emerge over the coming months. They will figure out who's going to operate what part. Is it going to be different operators, different entrepreneurs, with one overall management? How's it going to work? You know, they're forming a 501c3, the donor and their group, donors, and it'll go from there. So there'll be a period of time for approvals. They may start the demo before, you know, the construction permits are done. I don't know. I'm not an expert. And then they will build it as soon as they can. They have the money. They have the money to do it in a first-class way, and they've committed to that. One thing they did, which I thought was incredibly magnanimous, is the funders said, we don't care about recognition, and the fact that they're remaining anonymous speaks to that. We do care about the history of the community and those who came before us, so we'd like to offer the current naming donors, the people who have plaques inside various areas, that all that can stay or be put back in. You know, obviously when it gets knocked down, they'll go in storage and then come back to keep kind of the history of the place, including the name on the outside of the building, the Jimmy Prentice Morris building, which was so we don't erase the past. And I thought that was
an incredibly
great gesture and meaningful. And when I told the Prentice Morris family about that, they were, you know, there were tears in their eyes. It was a wonderful moment at the end of a very challenging, emotionally wrenching year for us, for them, for the community. You know, so there's a lot to be determined. I don't want to say too much because I don't want to say, well, it's going to exactly have this, and then it doesn't, and oh, Scott said this, and he's full of you-know-what,
okay,
and then
good.
From there. But it'll emerge, and as we, you know, there's certainly down the road there'll be a time to come back, or me or somebody who will be more in the know and come on the show and talk about that.
Is there a projective date when things will be up and running, full steam, whatever full steam will be then, the new normal?
No, just knowing how projects work, my guess is, and this is just me talking as a semi-amateur real estate guy in my past life was, you know, the permitting, you know, it'll take them, I would imagine, 2-3 months to put a plan together, get a bid out, get the contractors. Then there's an approval process. So I don't see them breaking ground before winter, because once the ground, you know, you can't, there's a construction window. So is it conceivable that they could break? Yeah, maybe, but I think it's sort of unrealistic timeline to say by, you know, by mid-November. I don't even know if they'll get permits by then. Now, maybe they do the demo work before winter. My guess is they would be ready to go the minute frost breaks, the first day you're allowed to put steel in the ground after, you know, some years it's in March, some years mm-hmm. April 1, something along about that time. Then you probably have, you know, 6 or 9 months of construction. Then you have 3-4 months of fixturing and building out everything and decorating and supplying and computer mm-hmm. systems and
et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
You know, hiring a staff and training and all that. So, you know,
it could be by
over a year,
Hanukkah 2017 or maybe it's Pesach 2018.
Yeah, that's probably the range. That's the best case and worst case is probably in that range. Which, you know, look, it's any time if you have a school or a building and you have to rebuild it on the same spot, you know, it'd be one thing if you could build it somewhere else, finish it, keep the one open, but we don't have the land to do that. So it's going where it is. That's a negative, but, you know, in this big picture scheme of things, it's a positive. So, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to have a new, fresh building.
Okay, good. Now,
so that's where we're at, and I know I've got a meeting I got to get to.
Okay, let me just ask you just a couple of more quick questions.
Sure.
How is it that Mayor Marion McClellan got involved, and what was her role?
Well, look, she obviously was very important to the city. You know, she's a member of the community and obviously the mayor. She independently reached out and encouraged funder and talked, I think, about how the city will be helpful and make it an easy process so it's not a bunch of horrible red tape and annoying, and encouraged and, you know, came to us with ideas of other, you know, even before we got to this, uses how the city could help and run some programming to help subsidize the cost and this and that. We chose not to go that direction, but she was engaged, and it was good. You know, it was good political leadership. We were yeah.
She was involved at the onset of this whole thing.
Yeah, and then she had a relationship with the one of the funders, and that was helpful because mm-hmm. I think would it have got done anyway. I don't know, but it certainly helped.
Okay.
You know, it was a good. You know, sometimes you have politics who gets in the way. This was not one of those times. This was a helpful moment, and it was good.
Okay. So, and yeah. There was a grassroots movement you mentioned before, and I know I saw on Facebook that some people actually participated in close to 100 meetings, and they actually
yeah.
raised $10,000 selling T-shirts. How much of a help was that in this
Look,
process?
They were helpful in a lot of ways. One of the ways was their surveying kind of painted a picture of what's more important than other things. The pool came very important on the list of things. That was clear. A place for seniors and older adults to gather. That was important. I think they helped get this done in a sense that it kept pressure. We probably would have got there anyway, but I think, you know, it kept, our staff was in constant dialogue with them. And, you know, had a lot of meetings with them. I attended a number of meetings with them, but I had people on my team who were meeting with them almost weekly and talking probably 3-4 times a week. And it was helpful to know the strength of feeling in the community. You know, good people, and you know, it was certainly, you know, in some ways a team effort. The mayor, the people, the members, the grassroots, our staff, who many of whom live in that neighborhood, were very helpful on this, and they really wanted something to get done and put a lot of time and energy into it. So
okay. This
is a good thing, and we're in a much better place on this particular issue than we were a few weeks ago.
Final question for you, Scott.
Yes.
So you mentioned before about the West Bloomfield JCC. So what's in line with them in solving their problems?
Look, I think this will obviously allow them to get much closer to a break even. The problems there are more long-term in that you have a facility that's old, too. It's over 40 years old. We think of it as new. It's not. It's an expensive building. It's a big building. The utility costs, there's maintenance costs, deferred maintenance. You know, that's all challenging in an environment where less and less people, you know, there's more competition. You have health clubs opening up on every strip mall. and they tend to be very either moderately priced or expensive with super fancy amenities. I look on Telegraph, we have one of each right by the Federation, a very low-cost entry, a little more Spartan, and then a really fancy one. So whichever market you're looking for, there's options all over, and people tend to go to the one closest to their house or their office. So it's a challenging, in the old days, you're Jewish, you wanted to work out, you went to a Jewish center. Very different now. So I think we have to be very strategic in the long term about what happens there. You have a school that's successful, you have some other entities there that are doing well, so it's not like you can, Berman Theater, who's occupied almost 5-6 nights a week, so you have important communal places, and a lot of people use it. It's a big facility, but it has a lot of traffic. But there's going to be some real challenges. This is not carving out the Oak Park to be a separate entity is not the end solution to the challenges facing the JCC. So that's, you couldn't, in a sense, take on both at once. We don't have the bandwidth for that. And now that's the next question, and there's a lot of discussion and meetings and research around what to do.
Okay.
So we will, that's a conversation for another day, but
it's
always a pleasure to talk to you.
Okay, our guest has been Scott Kaufman, the Jewish Federation. The good news is that the JCC is not permanent, and Oak Park is not permanently closing down, but will be reconfigured to a leaner, meaner machine, better serving the community. Well, thank you so much, Scott, for coming on, and we reserve the right, of course, to call you back as the situation warrants.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Okay, take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. This week, we're reading the portion of Kisavo, which most people, when they talk about Kisavo, talk about the curses that are there. And the curses are there because we're coming up to Rosh Hashanah, and you got to get your act together. We're not going to talk about that this week. We're going to talk about the very beginning of the portion and one specific detail. It talks about the first fruits, that before the holiday of Shavuos, which is in the summertime, people would come to Jerusalem, and they would bring the first fruits of their field. They would have the seven fruits that Israel is praised for, those being wheat, barley, grapes, figs, pomegranates, olives, and dates. And they would put them in a basket, and they would take them to the temple, and they would be presented to the Kohanim, and everybody had a big party. There was a whole parade with a cow, the whole business. I'm focusing on the basket, of all things to focus on. I think it says specifically, it had to be in a basket. Okay, it doesn't say what the basket was made out of. If a person was poor, they could use a wicker basket. If a person was rich, they could use a silver basket. But it had to be a basket. Sometimes a basket just gets in the way. Like, for example, there are times when I want to buy a habanero pepper. Okay, a habanero pepper in the grocery store is anywhere between like $1.99 to $3 a pound. Okay, so one habanero pepper is going to cost 25 cents. But if you put it in a plastic bag at that rate, so the habanero now costs 55 cents because you're paying $1.99 for the bag. Maybe there's something easier to put it in. Maybe you want to give first. It says there was no required amount. So maybe you want to be like really generous and you had like a bumper crop coming up and you want to give a wagon load of first fruit. So you want to drive into Jerusalem with this wagon. Guess what? When you get to Jerusalem, you got to put it into baskets. What's the deal specifically with baskets? To answer this question, we have to turn to the Kabbalah. Jewish mysticism. There is an expression that the world is created by God when God contained his infinite light, his infinite revelation, into what's referred to in the books as a keli. Very often, the word keli is translated, and may I say mistranslated, as a vessel. And that the what people then imagine is they've got this bucket full of light, which doesn't, that's not even close. And I tell people all the time that Kabbalah in English is as close to Kabbalah as there is no close. It's not even close. So the English words mean absolutely nothing when it comes to the concept. And that's why the word is Kabbalah, which means tradition, means you have to learn it from somebody who knows what it's talking about. You can't just open up a Kabbalah book and say, oh yeah, I got it. The word keli actually means something that has a use. So whereas a pot would be a keli, a vessel, so too would a ladder, a board, a hammer. And you can't hold anything in a hammer. But hammers are useful, and they do hold things. They hold the energy coming out of your arm going into that nail. So it's a whole lot easier to hammer a nail into, even use the verb. It's easier to drive a nail into a board with a hammer than it is with your hand, so to speak. So what's talking about over here is that the very best, the first thing God relates to firsts. There's firsts are discussed all over the place. All firsts go to God. The firstborn animals, the first of the fruits, the first of the shearings, the first of the wine, the first of the, all firsts belong to God. But the Almighty saying, listen, when you start your day, for example, that's like the first time of your day. It should be put into a basket, meaning it has to be contained in an orderly way. You can't just wake up and say, yippee, I'm going to go serve God and then fall flat on your face because you don't have a plan. No, the day is set out in a very orderly fashion. It even, as soon as we wake up, the first thing that we're supposed to do is thank God for allowing me to wake up. I could have died last night, God forbid. But thank you, God, I managed to actually get my head off the pillow this morning and then proceed my day along like that. My preparations, my getting ready for davening, for prayers, which involves learning deep Hasidic philosophy, and then my actual praying, which involves time. And in an order there, we start with the morning blessings and then go to the prayers, the hymns of praise, and then the blessings of the Shema. And then we say the Shema declaring God's oneness. Then we have the silent devotion and then the prayers of penitence afterwards and wrap it all up, thanking God that he's taking really good care for us and we're going to have a good day. And then we go on and we start our day. And we go on. And some people sit and learn, which is a good thing. So it all has to be done in this order. And that's what this is alluded to in the portion. You can't be all over the place. It just doesn't work. That's called the realm of confusion. We live in a world of order. And it's all alluded to in the first fruits. If you make your first fruit, if you take your first step, and you're dedicating it to the Almighty, and all the ensuing steps, even though you're going to work and you're doing your things, they're also going to be dedicated to God. We're going to take a quick commercial break, get back to the Hasidic story. Don't go away. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for the Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Way to do that is go to rabbifinman.com, rabbifinman.com. You'll find archived editions of the show. We got some pretty good ones up there. The last 5 weeks have been, I would say, A pluses. Yes, every one of them. If you missed any one of them, Rabbi Finman, go there, listen to it at your convenience, at your leisure. There's no pressure, no time. You can stop in the middle and pick it up later. You can just slide the little bar across to where you left off. Easy, no fuss, no muss, no bother. You also have archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U-Story, which are insights into the portion of the week, the holidays, which are presented in written form and in video form, presented by yours truly, hopefully to be entertaining and educational and concise, very brief. We know people don't have a whole lot of time. Something to grab on the go. You can do it on your smartphone even. It's just, you know, I would say you can do it on your smartphone waiting for a bus, but people in Detroit don't wait for buses. And there's also the very important donations page. The day after tomorrow is September. We're talking September now. Thank God. In August, we paid off July and August. Now comes September. It's the new year coming up in 2 weeks. It's a whole new cycle. You have to make sure that you got your 10% in before 2 weeks from today, because you're supposed to give to 10% minimum. And it's for this year. This year, the fiscal year starts September 13th at night. So go look at your books. Me, it's a beautiful thing. I have Quicken. So what do? I just check in grand total. I check in through the little pie graph over there. I see that my charity, is it up to my 10%? And if it's not, guess what? I sit down, I write checks. Thank God the Finmans are keeping up with things. We want you to keep up with things too. Go to Rabbi Finman. Donate today. The more people that donate, the less I get to talk about this stuff. And then we talk about I get longer stories to tell, which people like the stories. So contribute, rabbifinman.com, and I won't ask for money anymore. Don't like doing it the internet way? I can understand. Send your donation in any amount to, and I really do mean any amount, to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. There was a tzaddik, a righteous person by the name of Leib Sussover. I'm not exactly sure when he lived. I think he was contemporary with the Tzemach Tzedek, would put us at the 1850s, lived, and he's called Sussover because he was from the town of Sussov, which I don't know where it is, but I know it's many miles east of Grosse Pointe Farms. He was known for his upbeat demeanor. Even in the greatest adversity, he was always just like right there. Like the twinkle in the eye, the smile, greeting people, wonderful. Everything's good. Somebody once asked him, how could it be? And when he was getting older, he was sick, he was in pain. How is it that you're always in such a good mood? He says, I learned it from a thief. He says, what was the story? He, when he was a younger man, before he was a Rebbe, a leader, would go around collecting for various worthy causes, such as people were getting thrown in jail unjustly and they needed to be redeemed, and brides needed to get married who had no money. So he was into collecting funds for these people. One time he's going through the woods, and as the case may be, he was accosted by bandits. And they were going to kill him and take his money, which is what bandits did in forests in those places that are many miles east of Grosse Pointe Farms. The head bandit said, wait, stop. I know this man. This man is Leib Sussover. It once happened that I was an itinerant beggar, and I was unbelievably hungry. And this man came up to me out of nowhere and said, you look like you could use something to eat. And he gave me a large piece of bread and some borscht, and he really saved my life. We are not going to do anything to this man. And then he said, oh, by the way, Rabbi, one of our compatriots over here is a Jewish young man. So he used to learn in the yeshiva. Maybe you could test him. So he said, fine. So he asked him a question in the Talmud. The guy had no idea what he was talking about. So he asked him a question in Chumash. Again, he had no idea. He asked him a third question. He had no idea. So the leader said, this guy's an ignoramus. What is he doing over here? He deserves a good beating. And they tied him down, and they started giving him lashes. But this young man, as hard as he was getting beaten, he wouldn't cry. Until finally, Leib Sussover says, enough, enough, have rahmanis on him, have mercy on him. And he said, I will take charge of this man. And he, as they were walking away, he tried to convince him, and eventually did convince him that he should give up his way as being a robber. You should go back to the yeshiva and sit and learn. But he said, tell me, how is it possible that you didn't scream, that you endured such pain? So he said, oh, I just thought every beating, every lash was going to be the last. So why cry out now? It's done. It's over. Oh, there's another one? Okay, that one's the last. So he said, it's the same thing with this long, bitter gullus that we're in. Don't cry out. It's the last minute. And Leib Sasser actually believed that right now is the last minute of our exile with the Messiah coming immediately. That's going to do it for the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care.